As Sedgwick County ages, what's next for senior services? I'm Tom Schein, and welcome to The Range.
Support for The Range comes from McCown Gordon Construction and listeners like you.
Coming up, a place to explore while we wait for fall colors to arrive.
So what you're seeing now is kind of the culmination of the crescendo of the Prairie Garden.
But first, members of the Sedgwick County Commission agree that senior centers are worth funding. What they haven't been able to agree on is how to fund them. Now, officials are looking into new options for how to divvy up money for the county's 19 senior centers. Daniel Caudill reports.
It's just about lunchtime at the Goddard Senior Center when a familiar face walks in. Melvin Ormiston is here for a fresh meal and the smiles and conversation that come with it.
You gonna golf this week?
Tomorrow and Wednesday both.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We're having a tournament.
Oh, where at?
Auburn Hills.
Okay.
Ormiston is one of thousands of senior center members in Sedgwick County. The centers date back to the early 80s when voters approved a ballot initiative to fund aging services. Today, those centers provide services like meals, exercise classes, and social events for people 55 and up.
Well, it gets people out of their recliners and out, and they meet people, and socialization, I think, is always good for especially older people.
Traditionally, those services have helped seniors stay active and out of assisted living facilities. But now, they also play a role in keeping elderly people from becoming homeless. One report predicts the number of homeless seniors in the U.S. will double in the next 5 years as part of a so-called gray wave. Ella Hawk is director of the Goddard Senior Center. She says the community demand was clear from the start. The senior center in Goddard began about a year ago with around 20 people. Now there are more than 300 active members.
Our seniors are sort of set to the side, and that has always bothered me. I think they should be elevated, not ignored.
The center originally got about $6,000 from the county, but the need for services quickly grew beyond that budget, and the center had to ask for more money. The county commission used to give money to each center based on membership and number of services, but that criteria has been frozen since about 2017 when commissioners disagreed on whether the system was fair. The commission recently renewed the discussion by asking staff to look into options for funding criteria. But County Commissioner Jim Howell says he would prefer to use the original model instead of creating a new one. He also says current county funds are not meeting community demand.
I think that the services needed should drive the dollars we put into the program. That really is not what happens. Today we just say, well, what we do last year, let's kind of do that number again.
Overall funding for senior centers, like this one in Goddard, has lagged behind inflation in recent years. Commissioners corrected that in the most recent budget. But the county is getting older. About 11% of the county was over 65 in 2010. That percentage is set to double over the next 35 years. County staff are expected to present potential funding models for senior centers in time for next year's budget. That could determine the level of service Sedgwick County seniors can expect for years to come. For The Range, I'm Daniel Caudill.
October used to be firmly in the fall category, with an abundant tapestry of colorful elms and maples. But in South Central Kansas, summer can stubbornly hang on until early November. While we're waiting for those brilliant autumn colors, there's a subtle beauty to be found, if you know where to look. Luann Stevens tells us about one such place in this month's Hidden Kansas.
Mid-October can be tantalizing. You know it's just around the corner, while at the same time, there are lingering examples of summer's bright blooms. I had the chance to discover what this time of transition can mean during a visit to the Dick Arboretum in Heston. It was just barely warm, but the signs of the changing seasons were everywhere.
So what you're seeing now is kind of the culmination of the crescendo of the Prairie Garden.
That's Scott Vogt, the executive director of the Dick Arboretum.
You have a lot of the grasses that are in seed head, a lot of the asters that are blooming this time of year.
Those asters, bright purple and white, along with yellow sunflowers and vivid pink muley grass. I was lucky enough to have three guides that day. Scott was joined by Brad Gurr, Education Coordinator, and Janelle Flory-Schrock, the Public Engagement Coordinator. The Dick Arboretum could be considered a cross between a botanical garden and a habitat for native species, decorative plants, and tall grass prairie, but with its own spin.
The balance of humans controlling the landscape is a little bit different. You know, we're starting off with a design, and then you sort of co-create with nature this landscape that evolves over time.
We set off from one of the two main buildings, both framed by pretty cultivated gardens of native plants. But a short way down the path, we turned a corner, and there was an expanse of tall grass prairie.
When I started here 22 years ago, this was all an alfalfa field.
They gathered seeds from over 100 prairie remnants in the area. Several years later,
we now have what is a mimic prairie here to show all our visitors.
We walked past the prairie, and the path entered a wooded area with cedars on one side and on the other deciduous trees in a small thicket. The trees were just barely beginning to turn, while the sturdy asters were still a showy force of bright colors. We crossed a bridge over a small stream and a waterfall, overflow from the Arboretum's small lake, more native plants mixed with roses and grasses, and a plaque with a quote by Aldo Leopold, considered to be the founder of modern wildlife management. It's one of Janelle's favorites.
What 1,000 acres of compass plant looked like when they tickled the bellies of the buffalo is a question never again to be answered, and perhaps not even asked.
It speaks to the mission of the Arboretum. The days of the unending prairie are gone, and natural habitats are disappearing as our populations grow and suburbs spread further into the wild. If we don't take steps to preserve some of it, in the future, will we even know what we're missing? For The Range, I'm Lou Ann Stevens.
And one last thing. It's hard not to draw connections between last Saturday's No Kings protest and the anti-Vietnam War rallies of the 1960s and 70s. Both took place against the backdrop of a country deeply divided. It was a time when discussions with friends and family members were often contentious, as they are now. One of the larger rallies in 1969 included coordinated protests in cities across the nation, much like Saturday's. And like Saturday's event, it was denounced by critics as being led by people who hate America. The media was blamed in both cases for stirring up trouble and for its uneven coverage. Getting people to agree on whether the rallies are meaningful is likely impossible. But what shouldn't be up for debate is the right of people peaceably to assemble, as outlined in the First Amendment. That's as true now as it was 50 years ago. Thanks for joining us on The Range. Our producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Goulet, Jonathan Huber, and Lou Ann Stevens. Our digital producer is Hugo Fan, and Torn Anderson composed our theme music. The executive producer of The Range is Fletcher Powell. I'm Tom Shine, and this is KMUW, NPR for Wichita.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.